out and buy a car or fix the roof on your house or buy a snow machine or a fishnet, I don't know. Or you can buy shares in some other corporation, or you can take a trip. But Congress set this up with the idea in mind that after 1991, you would be able to sell your shares. And you would then go out and you'd spend the money, or you'd buy shares in a company. And in that way, you would participate in the commercial life and the corporate life of America. Congress also provided that 20 years after you receive your land under the settlement, it can be subject to property taxation, and that would mean that even undeveloped land in the 1990s might be subject to property tax if the state decided to impose one, or if city or borough authorities decided to impose one that applied to undeveloped native lands. Well, people have been talking about these questions and about how they feel. They've also talked about the fact that children born since 1971 have no right to be enrolled as shareholders. And I can tell you that everywhere we've been, the feeling seems to be universal that they feel the children should have been included and should now be included in some way or other. The principal concern that people have, and this is so whether we are in a subsistence village out in the Bering Sea, or whether we're in an urban community like Kenai, people are still concerned about the land, and they feel very strongly that they want to keep the land in native hands to be passed on from one generation to the next. And so people have talked about the possibility of changing ANCSA so as to keep the land in native hands. And they've talked about continuing the restrictions on sale of shares past 1991. So if you feel that there should be restrictions on the sale of shares after 1991, I'd like to hear about that. They've talked about transferring the land from the native corporations to some other body. In many places, they've talked about transferring the land to IRAs. We've talked, also been looking at the possibility of transferring native lands, if they're going to be transferred, not just to IRAs, but perhaps to nonprofit corporations or to cooperatives. We want to explore all the possibilities so that we will be able to make recommendations that will be helpful to you when you decide what you're going to do about all this. There are other issues that come up that perhaps you might want to refer to, and those are the question of native sovereignty, which people have wanted to talk about at these meetings, and subsistence. I don't know whether that's something that is paramount here, but in many places we've been, access to fish and game resources in the future is very important to people. As you know, under ANCSA in 1971, Congress extinguished the Aboriginal rights of Alaska Natives to take fish and game. And so rights to take fish and game now depend on state law and federal law and sometimes on international treaty arrangements. And people have been eager to discuss those. Well, I want each of you that wishes to say anything to feel free to do so. And when we begin, if you wouldn't mind sitting at this little desk here and speaking into this microphone. And the reason I ask you to do that is because we want to take down what you say on tape, And then it will be typed up, a transcript prepared, and we'll send that to you, to the local Native Corporation and the IRA, if there is one, or the nonprofit. I can also tell you that after all this is, after we finish these hearings, we're going to keep on traveling until early in the new year. But after that, I'm going to write a report about all this. And I'll send my report to each one of you who's testified at these hearings. And, of course, I'll send the report to the Native Corporations and the IRAs and the nonprofits. And my report will be available in the summer of 1985. My report will go to the Inuit Circumpolar Conference and to the World Council of Indigenous Peoples, which is co-sponsoring this commission, and they will submit it to the United Nations, but I will also be sending it to each one of you who has testified so that Alaska Natives will have copies available to them and they can use it in planning what they want to do about 1991 and all of these other issues. I can tell you that because ANCSA was the first great land claim settlement in the modern era, it was a breakthrough for Native people in many countries, and they are very interested in how it's worked out. Because in many countries, not just in Alaska, but in Canada and Greenland, in Norway, in the lower 48 even, land claims are still being advanced and still being settled. In Canada, the peoples of northern Canada have been settling their land claims in recent years. And in fact, the most recent settlement was reached by the Eskimos of the Mackenzie Delta in August this year. The Indian people of the Yukon Territory are negotiating at this time with the federal government, and their agreement is expected to be signed very soon. In the lower 48, there was a settlement made with the Indians of the state of Maine in 1980. There are other claims being advanced in the lower 48. The people of Greenland, the native people there, have home rule, but they still haven't settled their land claims with Denmark because Denmark still owns all of subsurface. In Norway, a commission on native claims handed in its report this year and made recommendations about the future of the Sami or Laplanders of Norway. So you have, in many countries, people engaged in settling their claims and interested in knowing what has happened here. Because of that, we've had some roundtable discussions in Anchorage during the course of the year, and we've invited native leaders and other people, experts from other countries, to come to Anchorage and talk about their claims, and they've exchanged information with Alaska Native people and Native leaders and experts at those meetings, and I think we've learned a lot from each other during that time. Well, I'm told that the machinery is now in working order and we can begin. Okay, well, bearing that in mind, we'll invite anyone who wishes to speak to do so. So please feel free to come to the front and speak here and about ANCSA or any of the issues that are of concern to you, because I really and truly have finished talking now.
Start out. My name is Gordon Poehler. I'm the president and chief administrator of the Kodiak Area Native Association. CANA is the regional nonprofit corporation addressing the social, health, and educational needs of the natives of the Kodiak region. CANA is a tribal organization and at the authority for contracting with government agencies to provide many of its services comes in the form of tribal resolutions enacted by the village tribal councils. I would like to reflect on the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act from a couple of different perspectives. One as an individual who is a shareholder in an ANCSA corporation, and one as the president of CANA, a position in which I have considerable contact with the tribal governments of our region and can make observations of the position ANCSA has left them in. At the time of the passage of ANCSA, I was living in the lower 48, and like a great many people, I regret to say I first viewed ANCSA as a means under which I could gain personal wealth. There were promises of high dividends under the corporate system. In a few years, we were told we would all be receiving a comfortable income. Needless to say, the large dividends never came. In fact, in this region, no dividends came at all. It was only after the realization that there would be little or no money going to individuals was I able to see ANCSA in another light. That is that the real significance of the act was not the money, but the land. That ANCSA was supposedly a vehicle for returning title to land to Alaska Native people. This past month, CANA coordinated a tribal government workshop here in Kodiak at which several representatives from each of our six village governments participated. The message that came out of this meeting was that while ANCSA, in a sense, had returned some land to Native people, it had not done it in a way that would protect it for future generations. As the Alaska Native villages, or tribes if you wish, have and did have at the time of the passage of ANCSA a sovereign status as domestic dependent nations, it was the responsibility of the United States government to deal directly with these Native governments in negotiating any type of land claim settlement. This was not done. The effect has been that the tribal governments of Kodiak Island have no land base. Title to the land that the villages traditionally used has been transferred to state-chartered corporations formed under ANCSA. With the implications of 1991, the land is in danger of being taken from Native hands completely. Tribal council representatives from all Kodiak villages have expressed a desire to have traditionally used lands under the ownership and jurisdiction of the tribal governments. Additionally, they have pointed out that ANCSA neglected to address the fact that coastal villages depend heavily on the sea for their livelihood and should have provided maritime zones for the exclusive use of each of the villages. I believe that at the present time there is a prevailing feeling of apathy concerning ANCSA among many in the Native population in the Kodiak region. This most likely comes from the lack of success in the business world of the regional corporation, Kodiak Incorporated. This lack of business success should not be surprising. When ANCSA was passed in 1971, the 20-year clock began to run. In 20 years, stock could be sold and land could be taxed. While 20 years was a short time, in reality, there was much less than 20 years. It was well into 1972 before Kodiak was actually incorporated. Then there were several years' effort put into enrollment and village certification. These activities drained corporate assets and prevented the corporation from focusing on its function as a business. There was a misconception of what it took to survive in corporate America. It was somehow expected that Native people could become proficient in the business world overnight. Individuals who had worked on the mechanics of the settlement moved directly into corporate management roles. While these people may have been accomplished politicians, it did not necessarily follow that they would excel as business managers. No one seemed to realize this at the time, and the leaders had good intentions and worked hard. Those qualities, noble as they may be, do not ensure survival in the American business world. Our business corporation has spent recent years mired down in litigation. It does not really matter who is right or who is wrong in the court cases. The point is that a business corporation cannot go about business as usual when it has to direct excessive time and resources towards lawsuits. The only winners are the lawyers. While there may seem to be many flaws in ANCSA, the Act is not without its positive effects. For many people, the Act restored a sense of Native identity. Families that used to be separated for many years were reunited during the enrollment process. The corporations formed under ANCSA found a political power previously unknown to Alaska Natives. It seems that in the American political system, it was easier to relate to Native business corporations and to Native governments. It appears that we will all have to live with ANCSA in one form or another for years to come. Changes will have to be made, however, if we are to keep the land. I hope that the report of the Alaska Native Review Commission will be put to good use in determining just what changes should be made. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Could you let us have the
sure.
written... could I just ask a question, Mr. Puller? You're president of the nonprofit.
Yes.
How many people does the nonprofit serve?
Approximately 2,000.
And about how many shareholders are there in the regional corporation?
I believe it's 3,300.
Oh, I see. And many of those are living outside the region, I take it.
Yes.
But what are the proportions of shareholders in Koniag, if you're able to tell me, who live inside the region and those who live outside?
I'm sorry, I don't know the exact numbers on that. I'm sure someone else here could tell you.
Sundberg might be able to answer that. Dean Sundberg?
I was just thinking Ole Olson could answer it.
Well, I'm sure we'll come to it.
He's at Koniag, I'm not.
Yeah. Maybe I could clarify the definition of who is a member of CANA, and it's... Mm-hmm. Any Native person living in this region, whether or not they're enrolled to Koniag. Some of our members are enrolled to other regional corporations.
Yeah. Okay, well, thanks very much, Mr.
Thank
Puller.
My name is DeWitt Fields, and I don't own any stock, and I'm not enrolled in any of the villages, but I have lived on the land for 28 years as a rancher, and I want to give a testimony as one who's been affected by the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, that I might be able to point out some of the difficulties that the people will face as they have selected the land. Saturday, I received notification from BLM that my ranch had been, conveyed to the Usinkin Native Corporation, and the file would be closed, And from here on, the responsibility would be to the Uzinka Native Corporation. Now for 28 years, I have lived and on 32,000 acres of land. That's what I've had under lease up till about 5 years ago, and I released 10,000 acres to the Uzinka Native Corporation at that time. As a rancher, I believe I'm the only one on Kodiak Island that has been affected by the Native Claims Settlement Act. And I never chose to get into litigation because I realized that Uzinka Native Corporation is a bona fide corporation, and I chose to try to work with those people, which have been very cooperative up to this time. But it's rather hard to give up something that you put 28 years of your life's blood in also. Well, when I went on to the ranch, of course, no one was interested in land on Kodiak Island at that time. I bought lots in front of the school up here, two lots for $100. And the road was closed for about 5 or 6 months for about 25 of the 28 years. So it's been a pretty difficult task to carry on a ranching enterprise because I had to snowshoe over the mountains, and then came the snow machines. I wore out about a half a dozen of those. And the last 3 or 4 years, the roads have been open because there's enough people moved in the area and petitioned so on that we've kept the roads open. Now, a lot of things have changed in that 28 years. The land along the road system today is probably worth about $10,000 an acre. And it's quite evident to see that you could not ranch on land that's valued that high. And in my opinion, that's the only land that has a ready cash value for the Uzinka Native Corporation. In 1927, the Alaska Grazing Act was written in Washington by Jack McCord, was one of the main instigators of that, writing that legislation. And we have operated here in Alaska on the Alaska Grazing Act since that time. Now, if BLM, Bureau of Land Management, would have given me the land when I went on it, I could have not paid the taxes on it. It's questionable if I could pay the taxes on it today if it was given to me. And it's been a very subsistence livelihood trying to raise cattle on it. So the problem you face is, what do you do with that much land if you can't generate revenue when a modern society has built up around you? Today, you talk about subsistence hunting or subsistence survival. What's left, every time a deer sticks his head up, or a rabbit, that's about all there is to eat on it. We get shot because of the influx of people. And we have an influx of all-terrain vehicles, three-wheel vehicles that are tearing the country up. I try to protect as much as possible. But all you have to do is drive along the road system here and see how the land's being torn up. And grass is the only resource we have. It's a renewable resource. It's a resource that has supported livelihood since the beginning of time throughout the world, with cattle or sheep, goats, camels, or something else that you can eat. Minerals you cannot put back in the ground. So the only thing we have is the grass, a natural resource that's renewable. But how that grass can generate any revenue, enough revenue to pay the taxes on it, with the influx of people that has raised the price of land, it looks impossible to me. And I think that's about all I have to say. I certainly have no animosity in my heart by losing the land. I think any time that land can be released from the federal government, it's the best thing for Alaska and its people. And I have dealt with BLM, the federal government, for 28 years. And I feel very strongly about that. Now I'm open for questions.
Well, maybe I'll think of some later, but I don't have any right now, sir.
Yes. Okay.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
My name is Roy Madsen, M-A-D-S-E-N. I was involved in the organization of the Kodiak Area Natives in 1965 and also lobbied for the passage of the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act in Washington in 1971. I also served as counsel for the Koniag Regional Corporation, to which I'm registered, and as a director of the Lesnoy Corporation, to which I'm registered, in which I hold stock. And so I've had an opportunity to participate in the Claims Act, and over the last 13 years to watch it function. And I think one of the things that bothers me the most about it is what I've seen happen over these last few years, and that is it wasn't recognized as a flaw at the time, but I think it's turned out to be one of the biggest shortcomings of the act that I as far as I'm concerned, that is the fact that under the Act, the villages have to be incorporated and function as corporations. I've seen a lot of boards of directors elected in the last 13 years, and I've seen them flounder. We've tried educational programs to try to educate the people in what their duties are. But I just feel that the qualified type people just aren't in the villages so that it can ever function as a corporation. The population of the villages are too small, and the level of education that it requires is greater than you'd normally find in the villages. And consequently, the same people have to function in that for over a period of years. And I think that in this day and age, where we talk about burnout in a lot of the segments of society, and I think that I've seen it happen in the village corporations and the regional corporations, the same people rushing from one meeting to another and trying to take care of all the duties that are thrust upon them, try to keep up with everything that's going on. And it has created a lot of hardships. In fact, I've seen a lot of divorces result because of the demands that are placed on the people that serve in that kind of a capacity. I think one of the worst aspects of this type of an organization is the what we have seen come out of the requirements that you function under the state corporation law, and how it deals with how elections are held, and the necessity for proxies. And my observations, it appears that the requirements are so technical that in order to have a proper proxy, you have to have a lawyer draw it up in the first place. And so that means that the person that gets to the lawyer first with the slate of candidates and has the money to underwrite the cost of having the proxies printed has the jump on everybody else. And I don't think it was ever intended that life in the villages was to be governed in that fashion. As a result of this, we've seen numerous lawsuits that have sprung up because of technicalities in the proxies. This has placed a financial burden on the village corporations, in fact, has broken some. And the people that are elected to serve the rest of the people in the villages are subjected to threats of lawsuits or actually have been sued. And it just compounds the financial burden all the way around. And I just think that this, if it's ever going to function, and I just can't see it functioning in the next 7 years, this particular provision of the law has to be changed to something that's more manageable. The villages that had the strongest government, the most effective leaders, was the type of council form of government, village councils. The people that usually served were the respected elders, and they generally did a good job. People looked up to them, followed their advice, and I just feel that some other vehicle other than a corporation has to be devised to make this thing operate. We've got outsiders that are involved in the village affairs, not only from the lawyers that get involved, but the state of Alaska as well. And I don't think that when the act was being written that it was envisioned that we're creating a big controversy. It was supposed to settle things, not create more controversy, generate something that's going to generate controversy as far as we can see. And I just feel that this is, to me, one of the most important areas that could be rewritten and probably made more workable for the benefit of all the people.
Any, you mentioned two things. You said that the whole system of proxy voting, you said the whole system of proxy voting just doesn't work, at least at the village level. Is that because you think people should vote in person or cast a ballot?
No, absolutely not. No, I think that that would be disenfranchising some people that couldn't afford to travel to the villages that don't live there. Yeah. I certainly don't advocate that. What I'm saying is that the people that are in the villages, if they have a slate of candidates, they can't put them on the slate unless they go to Kodiak or to Anchorage or someplace else, hire a lawyer, have the lawyer draw up the proxy, and then spend the money that it requires to solicit the proxies. Otherwise, it's just right. Ineffective.
I understand that's a fairly common complaint about this, but I'm just curious, have you thought about how you might run this? Would you prefer a mail ballot? That is, people get a ballot in the mail, and if they don't return it, nobody can cast it by proxy. I'm just curious where we go from here. If the present arrangement is not working, any ideas about what might work, that's all.
Well, my only observation is that the people that live in the villages seem to elect the kind of people that they want to have represent them. And to me, that says something, because they're there and they can vote. They know what the people stand for and everything. But it doesn't cost them an arm and a leg to get out and vote and or to support somebody that they would like to see in public office. And I just think that there must be a simpler way of doing it than the present system provides for.
Yeah. well, you also said you thought that there should be, that in the villages, certainly the corporations aren't the instrument, the institution that is needed. Any thoughts about what might work at the village level?
I think, as I said, that the village council type of government has worked in the past. It has provided strong leadership, and maybe something in that form of government. I recognize that since stockholders are the people that have an interest are much broader than just the people that live in the village, so it'd probably have to be outside representation and that kind of an arrangement as well. But
that's the difficulty about that. You've got all these people who don't live in the village, and I'm told that many of the IRA constitutions say the only people eligible for membership are those living in the village, and so there has to be some way of getting clear of that.
Right. Well, I'm not saying that it has to be a strict IRA type of tribal council. Maybe there's some kind of a hybrid that incorporated the best features of several different types of work. What I'm saying is probably what we should be doing is studying alternatives for the corporation, because too much time has passed, and I think if there's anybody in the audience that disagrees, I'd like to hear that if they feel that the corporation's the only way to go or the best way or it's working, I'd like to hear about it. But I think this is the most common complaint, and we should be looking for alternatives if it isn't. And I'm just expressing my own personal opinions and beliefs here.
Well, we had a roundtable discussion in Anchorage last week, and we had experts talk about some of these alternatives, IRAs, nonprofits, and cooperatives and so on. And and next month in Anchorage, we're bringing some people from the Lower 48 and from other countries to talk about alternate approaches. That is, what are they doing in other places? And I hope that out of that may emerge something that will work if people want to make a change.
Apparently, this isn't something that's completely peculiar to Alaska. I was either reading something or saw something on television here within the last couple of weeks about some Indian tribes in the South 48, California, or someplace where there is a very small group of people that had some reservation land, and they were starting bingo games. They were building a big hall. They got the funding for it and spending several hundred thousand dollars for this because it was going to make millions. It was going to make several million dollars a year. And There was a controversy about that because the people that didn't live on the reservation said it was going to affect them and how the money was being spent. So it's there are other areas that have similar problems, and not identical, but similarities.
Yeah, well, we hope to hear from them, too. Thanks very much. Well, it's quite warm in here. I'm going to take off my jacket. Well, Mr. Madsen invited anybody that disagreed with him to speak up, so...
I think we all agree with him.
Well... Would you like to say something then, whether you agree or disagree with him, I think?
I don't have a written, prepared statement, but I just like to kind of speak from the heart in the way that I feel. I... haven't really been involved with anything up until the last couple of years.
Could I have your name just...
Yes, my name is Margaret Roberts.
Thank you.
I am a board member of Native Secodiak Village Corporation, and I'm also the chairperson of the CANA Board of Directors. Like I said, I haven't really been involved up until the last couple of years, but I sat back going to the annual meetings of our regional corporations and finally decided that, you know, I needed to speak up and speak my thoughts because I didn't like to see what was happening. I've watched ANSCA take friends and turn them into enemies. And I hope that someday they can all become friends again. I believe that that the land was given to the wrong, or was the wrong instrument to give to the corporations. I believe that the land should always be there for our tribes, for our people. That I just don't see how the people in the villages can remain there if the land is sold. I had something else that I wanted to mention was subsistence. I noticed that was one of the articles that was in the paper. Our peoples have always, we've always been a proud people. And we've always taken care of our own. We've been able to hunt and fish up until we became a state and had to abide by all the state laws. We can no longer go out and feed our families in the manner that we're used to. And I sure like, I know there's really not much that we can do about that. I wish that ANSCA could be amended to not only give us our land, but also our waters, so that we may fish and have our marine mammals that we used to have. I don't know what else to say. I just...
What about 1991? If the law is not changed, then people will have the right to sell their shares. And do you think they should have that right, or do you think that they won't sell their shares even if they have the opportunity, or do you think they should be restricted so far as selling their shares is concerned? Any ideas about those questions?
Well, I don't know. I'd like to see the IRA councils or the traditional councils. I'd like to see everybody join in, and because as it is now, the afterborns the ones that don't have enough blood quantum cannot cannot benefit in any way. And I think the only way that we ever can benefit is through an actively working council where we live. And that way our families will always be served or serviced, or and hopefully they will have the land and everything to enjoy the hunting and the fishing. And I'd like to see our regional corporations and village corporations and our traditional and IRA councils all pulling together and working together to achieve